Okay, go back to week 8 and click on reference for ASCII. Okay. So last week we looked at ASCII, binary, hexadecimal, and decimal. And this week we're going to look at ASCII, and this is a good table to work off of. So if you go to that table. Okay, so to start out with, this gives you the letters of the alphabet, numbers, special characters, and gives you the code, but it gives it to you in either hex or decimal. Okay, so A, for example, is 41 hex, and it is 65 decimal. So it tells you the translation of the code as opposed to laying out all the ones and zeros. So A is a 41 in hex. So that means it's a 4 and a 1. So what it is that ASCII has 8 bits. Okay, so in ASCII, 8 bits make a byte. So it's got 8 bits. And what we do if we're translating into hex, is we have 1, 2, 4, 8, and then 1, 2, 4, 8. So we translate the two groups of 4. So we have 1, 2, 4, 8, 1, 2, 4, 8. So the 4, it's a 41. So the 4 is turn on the 4 and turn everything else off. And the 1 is turn on the 1 and turn everything else off. So an A has the code of 01000001. Okay, that's the code for an A. If I look at this as hex, if I look at this as decimal, it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. Okay, and it is 65 decimal. So to get 65, I turn on the 64, and I turn on the 1, because 64 and 1 make 65. So I turn them both on. Everything else is turned off. And you can see that I've got the same answer that I had when I translated the hex. So I can either translate the hex or I can translate the decimal. And either one will give me the binary code that stores an uppercase A. Okay, so that's the binary code that stores the uppercase A. Questions? Okay, so now I'm going to kind of stick with the hex, because the hex is, I think, easier. So a B, if I look here, a B is in hexadecimal 42. So it is a hexadecimal 42. Which means that I'm going to turn on the 4, which is 0100. We already know that up above. So it's 0100. And then I'm going to turn on the 2. And turning on the 2 means, what do I have for the next 4 digits? 0010. 0010. Okay, so that's a B. Then a C is going to be what? 0100 and then 0011. Okay? Because it's going on and making a C. The next one I'm going to look at is a Z. Okay, what's a Z going to be? Well, if I look down there, a Z is 5A. That was 43. It's 5A in hex. So I turn on the 5, which would be what? What's a 5?
0101,
because I'm turning on a 4 and a 1, right, to make 5? So 5 is, I'm turning on the 4 and 1 to make 5. And then what's an A?
10.
A is 10.
1010.
So what do I turn on for a 10?
1010.
No. 10.
8 plus 2.
8 plus 2. Okay, maybe I didn't understand you.
So 1010.
Okay.
For some reason I
thought you put two zeros at the beginning. So 10, so that's turning on an A, which is an 8, and a 2, and that's an A, right? 8 and 2 make A, because 8 and 2 make 10, and 10 makes A. So if you look here, there's a pattern. And the pattern is that the first three letters on all of these are 010. The pattern is 010. So 010 is the code to tell me that it's uppercase. Okay, 010 tells me that it is uppercase. Okay? So 010 is telling me that I have an uppercase. So now I'm going to look at. I think I will erase this. So an uppercase A, we already looked at, and it was 41. So it was 0100001. So now I want to look at a lowercase A. And lowercase A is a 61 in hex. And so a lowercase A is a 6. So what do I turn on for a 6?
0110.
That's right. 0110. And it's a 1, so it's going like this. Okay, so that's what an A is. And a Z, we looked at a minute ago, capital Z was what? 011. And then what? Z is a 5A, in case you don't remember.
Okay. 0101.
So it was a 5, yes, thank you. 0101, and then the A is what?
1010.
And then let's look at a lowercase Z, and a lowercase Z is a 7A. So what's a lowercase z going to be?
0111.
And it is 1010. Okay? So that's a lowercase. So notice the difference. 010 is uppercase. 011 is lowercase. The rest of it is the same. So 011 is 11 is lowercase. Okay, 010 was uppercase, 011 is lowercase. What this does is the first three characters tell me the group that it's in. Uppercase, lowercase, numbers have a 3 there. Okay, 01, 0011, so 001. The last five digits tell me which one in the group. So the last five digits tell me which one in the group. In the older codes that they came up with, they had only four digits for the which one is it. But there was a problem because there were 26 letters in the alphabet. And four digits only goes up to 15. 1111 is 8421 turned on is 15. So that was a problem. So they had to make part of the alphabet one group and part of the alphabet another group. Well, that didn't seem to be a good plan. So they decided to group it all together, but they said, okay, to go to 26, I need one more character. So I'm going to have the code as the first ones, and then the last five are which one it is. Okay? Because in the last five, I have got 11010 for a Z. Which means this now becomes a 16. 16 is turned on, 8 is turned on, 2 is turned on. That makes 26. So that's the 26th letter of the alphabet. So I needed to grab that one from the first four and put it with the last four to be able to get up to 26. Okay, and so that's what I did. The first three is telling me which group, uppercase, lowercase. And the last five is telling me which character within that group. Okay, which character it is within that group. Questions? So if I gave you the number 0, let's see, 0111001, okay, what letter is that? Anybody get a letter? What letter they think that is?
Is it a lowercase q?
Yep. It's a lowercase q. Okay, so to figure this out, the first three characters tell me that it's lowercase. Okay, because the first three characters classify the group. If I put a 010 there, it would be uppercase. The 011 tells me it's lowercase. And then I've got the 8 turned on and the 1 turned on, right? The 16. Good job. I've got the 16 turned on and the 1 turned on. So that means it's the 17th letter of the alphabet. I don't know about you, but I start counting on my fingers. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q. So it's Q. 17th letter is a Q. Okay? So if I know I know it's lowercase, and I know that it is the 17th letter. Okay, now the hex for this is also, if I do the hex, it is a 71 in hex. And so now I can go down here and look for 71, and there's 71, so that tells me that it's a lowercase q. not a very good arrow that I drew. Okay, so 71 told me that I had a lowercase q. So that's another way of doing it, is to convert it into hex, and that will tell me that it is a lowercase q. I can also convert it into decimal. So if I convert it into decimal, zero one 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 zero 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 one one two four eight sixteen thirty two sixty four one twenty eight. So 64 and 32 is what 96 112 113, and when I look at the Q down here, the decimal has 113, so that's 113 in decimal. And when I look at the Q, it's got the 113. So I can either, when I got that number, I could have done the decimal conversion, come up with a 71 and then check the chart. I could have done a hex, I'm sorry, come up with 113 in decimal. Come up with a 71 in hex and check the chart. Or I can simply say 011, I know that's a lowercase. 16 and 1 are turned on, that's 17. It's the 17th letter in the alphabet. Okay? And then when I know it's the 17th letter, then I can figure out what it is. Yes, no, maybe? Okay, so try the word hello. Tell me the binary that would come up, the binary for hello.
All capital?
Yes, all capital this time.
Hexadecimal, decimal.
I want to know the binary. How you get it, I don't care. I want to know the binary for H and the binary for E. And then we'll look at the hex, obviously, coming out of that. But I want the binary to start out with. Say that again? Yeah. I didn't show me it, you just said. Eight after the four ones is now.
Okay, all right.
Because it's 8421. 84 is 12, 2 more is 14, and 1 more is 15. So. You've got it, so try to get him up to speed, because you weren't here Thursday, right?
Huh?
Right, so take a couple of minutes and explain the H business, and I'll go over it in a minute. Did anybody come in and not sign the attendance? Because I think I didn't count right. Okay, so hello. First of all, I know that it is a capital letter, so what do I write first?
0100?
010, right?
Yeah.
That tells me it's a capital letter. So that part I know. Now the next five are to tell me which. Well, if I use my fingers, I know that H is the eighth letter in the alphabet, right? So eighth letter in the alphabet, that's an eight. It's the eighth letter. So I need to turn on the eight. Five. 16, 8, 4, 2, 1. I need to turn on the 8 because it's the 8th letter in the alphabet. Okay, so I need to turn on the 8. And then if I look at that in a hex way, I've got 448 in hex. And so if I come over here and look at H, it is indeed a 48 in hex. Okay? So I could have gone to the chart and come up with the fact that it was a 48 in hex and then written the 4 and the 8, and that's the other way I could have got the binary, is to go to the chart, find out it was a 48, and then written it out, and that would have given me the binary as well. And for that matter, I could have gone in and got the decimal, which was 72, turned on the 64, turned on the 8, that would have got me 72, and that would have come up with the same answer. So there's a load of ways I could have done that. Okay, the 8, E is the fifth letter in the alphabet. So I again start out with 010, because that's going to tell me that it's uppercase. I don't need the 16. I don't need the 8. I do need the 4. I don't need the 2. I do need the 1. So I turned on the 1 and the 4 to make it a 5 there. So this is 45. Okay? It's 45. And if I look, 45 is indeed what an E is. Okay. What's the L? What's the binary for the L?
0100. 0100. 1100. 1100.
Okay, anybody agree? So that translates to, if I look in the chart, the L says that it is 4C, And this is indeed 4C, because this is a 4. 8 and 2 to 8 and 4 turned on is a 12, which is a C. So it's 4C. Okay? L is what letter of the alphabet? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. So it's the 12th letter of the alphabet? Okay. So L is the 12th letter, and I turned on 8 and 4, which make 12. So that's the other way of doing it. 8 and 4 make 12. It's the 12th letter. And O is what letter of the alphabet? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O. O is the 15th letter of the alphabet. Okay, so O is the 15th letter. And so O, I think I better do up here. O is the 15th letter, so it's going to be equal to 010, and then the 15 means I turn on the 8, 4, 2, and 1. I don't need the 16, so that stays a 0. So the 15th used 8, 4, 2, and 1. So this now is 40F, 4F. And so if I look, an A is indeed a 4F. Okay? An A is indeed a 4F in hex. Okay? So that's how I can figure out what I've got. So hello, I know that that's what an H looks like. That's what an E looks like. L and O, what they look like. So I can see it in binary, I can figure out in hex, and if I want to go to the extra load, I can figure it out in decimal. Questions? So if I get a dump of memory, and it gives me the binary, I can figure out what characters it is. If it gives me the hex, I can figure out what it is. And if it gives me the decimal, I can figure out what it is. Okay? And part of it is knowing that the 010 means an uppercase, 011 means a lowercase. Then I can look at numbers. And numbers, notice that the number 0 is a 30, and the number 1 is a 31. Okay, so 30 in hex is going to be 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. That's a 30. Okay, and that's the 0 equals that. 1 is a 31. So 1 is going to be 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. Okay, so that's a 31. And the 0, 0, 1, 1 goes at the beginning, and then the 1 is on there. So that's a 31. Special characters are kind of mixed around. Okay, special characters show up in a lot of different groups to kind of finish things off. Okay, let's try this. Okay, what is that? What are those three characters?
It'll be capital M-I-W.
Pardon me?
M-I-W.
Yeah, that's capital. What I've got. Anybody?
Yeah, I got it.
M-I-W. Okay. So this comes out as M-I-W. Okay, so first of all, I know they're all uppercase because they all start with 010. Okay? This one has 8-4 and 1 turned on. That's 13. And so it's the 13th letter in the alphabet. And if you count, pardon? That's a D in hex. But it's also the 13th letter in the alphabet. Okay, so you're right. If I was writing the hex for this, the hex would be written as 4D. Because that's a D. But right now, I'm trying to figure out what letter it is. And so I know that if the D is a 13, so it's the 13th letter. So A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M is the 13th letter. So it's an M. And if I come over here and look under M, 4D is what I have. So you're right, it's a D. But it's also the letter M. Okay, the next one is the 9th letter. So this is the 9th letter. That was the 13th letter. This is the 9th letter, and the 9th letter is an I. And then down here, I've got to use all of these. So the 16 is on, and the 4, 2, and 1 are on. So that means it's the 23rd letter. Okay, 23rd letter. And 23rd letter is a W. Okay? W and then three more X, Y, Z finishing off. It's a W. And if I look at this in hex, this is a 557. And if I go into the chat, 57 is a W. Okay, so the hex is 57. 57 is equal to a W. Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. So on the homework, I've asked you to play around with this, and I've also got you doing a little bit of subtraction. action in binary, just to be comfortable with binary. So I'm going to do just a little bit of that. We did addition last time, but we didn't get to binary, subtraction. So if I start out with this, 0 from 1 is 1. 1 from 0 I can't do, so I have to borrow, which gives me a 1-0 over here. And 1 from 1-0 is 1. 1 from nothing I have to borrow again, and this becomes a 1-0. 1 from 1-0 is 1. Okay? So that is how I can subtract. So if I double check this by doing an addition, 0 and 1 is 1. 1 and 1 is 1, 0. Put down the 0, carry the 1. 1 and 1 is 1, 0, plus 1 is 1, 1. So I got the same number, so it's right. The other thing I can do is look at this in decimal. That would be equal to the 1 is on, the 4 is on, and the 8 is on. So that's a 13. The 2 is on and the 4 is on, so that's a 6. 6 from 13 is 7, and 111 is a 7. So I know that I got it right, because by converting to decimal, I can see that I did the math correctly. Okay. The big thing in doing this is remembering and going up and back, but 1 plus 1 is 1, 0. Plus 1 is 1, 1. Plus 1 is 1, 0, 0. Plus 1 is 1, 0, 1. 1, 1, 0. 1, 1, 1. 1, 0, 0, 0. And if you're, you know, you can go back and forth in that to help with doing the calculation. So if I gave you 10001 minus 111, okay, that's going to involve a lot of borrowing. Give that a try, and if you can do that, you can do anything. Okay, so try that one. What do you think? 1010. Anybody buy that? I don't know the answer, so. Anybody like 1010, or do they like something else? One, take from one is zero, right? So that works. One from zero I can't do. I have to keep going over to borrow. And I finally get here and I say, okay, make that a zero and bring over the 10. But that's not where I need it. So I make that a one, bring over the 10, but that's still not where I need it. Take one, leave a 10, bring it over. One from 10 is one. 1 from 1 is 0. 0 from 1 is 1. Okay, so you got it. Yes, no, maybe? And again, to figure this out, you can take and say, I'm going to look at what the hex is, a decimal is, rather. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. So that's 17. Minus, this is 7. that's a 10. The 8 and the 2 are on, so this is also a 10. So that's the correct answer. So you can check it by doing the decimal. Okay? And in fact, you can play around with the decimal to start out with if you want to, if you find that easier. But I'd like you to play around with binary a little bit. I mean, it's really the same concept as in decimal. It's just when you borrow, the 1 0 is 2 ones, and in decimal, the 1 0 is 10 ones. So that's the difference between borrowing, okay, is when you borrow in binary, when you borrow 10, you're getting 2 ones. In decimal, when you borrow, you're getting 10 ones. So if you take one more, you leave 9. In binary, if you take one away, you leave 1. Questions? Okay, so the homework, if you bring up the homework, the second problem gives you a dump of memory. So this is the dump of memory that I got. And so I'm asking you to tell me what that really says. And the way you do it is basically go to that chart that I gave you and come up with, okay, what's a 43, what's a 4F, and just go into that chart that we've just been looking at and figure out what these things are. Okay? 41 was an A, 42 was a B, 43 was a C. So we know that the first character here is a C. Okay? Because a 43 was a C. Questions? Okay.
The assignment that you are looking at there.
Yep.
Is that in week 8 or week 9?
9.
Okay.
Number 9. Yeah.
Can we do one more
How about that? Anybody got an answer for that?
1 0.
Pardon?
Just 1 0.
1 0?
1 0.
Okay, anybody else? Could anybody agree with that?
It's 1 0
is the average. That was her guess. So what else? Who else has got something else?
I got 1 1 1 0 0.
You got what?
1 1 1 0 0.
1 1 1 0 0.
Okay. 1 0 0 1 0.
1 0 0 1 0. Okay. Anybody else got another guess? Do I have 2 votes for any of these? Which one?
Bottom one.
The bottom one?
Yeah, the bottom.
Huh? The bottom one seems to be popular. Okay. So, one from one is zero. That's the easy part. Then one from zero I can't do. I can't borrow from here, so I have to come over to here. So this becomes a zero, and I bring over one zero. But that's not where I want it. So I have to borrow one from it, leaving one behind, and I bring over one zero. So one from one zero is one. Okay, so far we're doing well with the bottom one. Okay, one from one is zero. Zero from zero is zero. Now I want to take one from one zero, and I can't do it. So I have to cross this one out, bring over one zero. One from one zero is one. So 1 0 0 1 0 is the correct answer. Okay? So converting it to decimal, I've got 1 on, 2, 4, 8 on, that's 9. 16, 32, 32 and 9 is 41, right? I've got 1, 2, and 4 on, that's 7. And I've got 16 on, 16 and 7 is 23. So I'm claiming I want 18, right? As my answer. And I've got 2 on and 16 on, and that gives me 18. So in fact, that is right, okay, because it's 18. Yes, no, maybe? You're buying it? Okay. Are you all set? Okay. I'm going back to the page. And I'm going, looking at this project portfolio. We'll make this due in a month, just so you have time to kind of gather some stuff up. So it's not that hard. We're just going to make it a month so you have time to gather things in. What we do here is, in your capstone course, you'll have to put together a portfolio, which is something you can take to future employees and show it to them. Okay? You haven't had enough courses to do much, but I want you to kind of get started on thinking about it. So we're going to start to put together a portfolio. Eventually, portfolio, if you go to notes and handouts, a portfolio can contain all of these kinds of things. Then make a nice portfolio that you can take out to show to people. But for now, we're just getting started. So just kind of, this is a kind of show of what a good portfolio can look like. Yeah. Notes and handouts. And then under portfolio, it shows. So if you want a really good portfolio, you can start eventually putting together something in the portfolio. But for now, we're just doing it to get you started and also as a refresher on HTML. So if I go in under examples and go to HTML5, template for a portfolio. So there is a very simple, basic title page for a portfolio. You can make certainly a far more interesting looking one, but this is a very simple one. So I put together a portfolio for Jane Doe, and I've got her email and her major and her option And then I would put a description of the program in there and a description of primary goals, professional goals, or something like that. Then I have a click here to go to the table of content. So if I look at view source, okay, I can see the link that I have there. And that's a link to a page that is portfolio table of contents. So I've got my current page, and then I've got this page that I'm linking to. Notice I made my page index.html. I have mentioned this before, but if your page is index.html, then you don't have to give anybody the page name, because index.html is loaded by default. So if you just, for example, when you go to my home page, it's www.pgrosser.net. There's no page there, it's just pgrosser.net. My first page is entitled index.html. So if you don't give a page, it goes looking for something called index.html, and that's what it loads. I believe home.html also works. Okay, but I haven't tried that for a long time, so I can't promise. I always use index. But home.html, I think, also will work. Somebody can try that and see. So here I've got my page, and I link to a second page. Okay, I'm linking to the second page. If I have them in the same folder, I do not need an address. If I have them in a different folder, I got to come up with an address. Now, this has to be put up on CIS Web. So you're going to have to go back and dig up your ID, password, so that you can put it up on CIS Web. Okay? So now if I go back and I click on that, I bring up my kind of list. And again, this can be a lot more interesting. None of these links work because I didn't do them. But what I would have here is a bunch of links to different things. Now, I said in the assignment I wanted you to link to, I think it's two JavaScripts, and something else, and a database. So if I want to link to a database, I have an ACCDB extension. So if I want to link to a database, I might say first.accdb, and I can put out my database. Put it out on the web, just drag up the database that I made in Access, and it has a name, whatever name I gave it. I gave mine first, we'll say, and then the extension on a database is ACCDB. So if I wanted to go to my database, I would be writing ahreference equals first.accdb, and when I click on that, it would download my database. Okay, so I want you to have four things to click on. One is a database, two are JavaScript, and one is just something from some course. Okay, just something you want to do. So I want the beginnings of a portfolio, and I want them such that you send me the address of the first page on CIS Web, and I can then find it and click on it and see your portfolio. As I said, I don't think this will take a lot of time, but getting it so that it's up on the web and everything, and figuring out what you're going to put up there, I figured I'd give you a little time. So you can pass this in a month. Okay? Okay. Questions on this? Yep.
Someone has a question.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I'm wondering, for the portfolio project, if you already have something created, do you want to start from scratch or do you...
No, if you've already done one, as long as it meets those criteria that's done in HTML, yeah, that's fine. Because it's probably a lot fancier than the one I'd had to do. Okay. Other questions? Okay. We are going to start very briefly to look at database a little again. So essentially this week is go back to stuff we did at the beginning. Go back to HTML, make sure you're comfortable with that. And then go back to Access is the next thing and make sure you're comfortable with that. And then the next week, we will be looking at Visual Basic, and I think that about wraps us up. I try very hard to have the last week of classes all open lab, so that I just have open labs the last week of classes, so that you can get time to get made up then. So the last week, there are no classes, probably, hopefully, and it's just make-up time. And I will try to squeeze in another makeup lab. Which reminds me, next Tuesday, I would definitely come because you're going to have to write a paper on talking to a mentor, and I've got the mentors all lined up. I just need to send them to you. But next Tuesday, the 5th, I've got 5 alum that are working in the field, coming in and talking about their jobs and what they do. And then that will become part of the paper that you have to write about careers. So you've got to write a paper on careers. And so it's well worth coming and listening to these people. There are 5 people that have a variety of jobs. They all graduated from BCC, from CIS, and they'll all basically tell you about what they did. And all that good stuff. So, that will be next Tuesday. As I said, I've got 5 of them coming. Okay, so now we're going to look at databases. The database that you looked at the beginning of the semester was only one table. Now we're going to look at multiple tables. So a database that is made up of multiple tables has to follow certain rules. And those rules are called the normal form. You have to normalize and get your database into what's called the normal form. So the normal form has a bunch of rules. And what we're going to do is start looking at those, look at an example on Thursday, and then work on an example on Thursday, another example. So this donation database we will work on in class, we will work on that on Thursday. Okay, so normalization. A database can be in multiple tables, and when a database is done, it should be, if it's a relational database, it should be in the normal form. Big data has other ways of doing it, but most of the companies that are here are still using relational databases. Big data tends to be used by big companies. So if you work for Amazon, they're probably using big data. But most of the other companies around here are probably using a relational database. So a relational database has to have 3 rules that it follows. And a relation is in first normal form if it does not contain repeating groups. Okay. So the problem with repeating groups is that you have to pick a number of how many there are. So let's say that I set up a student table and I want to keep all of the courses that you took on the student table. How many do I pick? Do I say, okay, the most anybody's going to take is 30 courses. So So I'm going to put 30 slots on that table, one for each of 30 courses. And then the next day, somebody signs up for the 31st course, and I tell them, sorry, you can't take that. I've only got room for 30. So that's the problem with repeating groups, is that if I set up slots for them, sooner or later, I'm going to go over that slot. And I always tell the story of I called to place an order, and I wanted to place 7 things. And when I got to the 5th thing, the woman said, thank you for your order. And I said, but I'm not done. I got 2 more to go. And she said, I can only take 5 things. And she and I argued for a while because I wanted my 2 other things. And finally she said, oh, all right. And she said, give me a name. And I gave her my name. Give me your address. I gave her my address. Give me your credit card number. So basically she was doing a whole new order for me. And the reason was that the work that she had to fill in had areas for 1 order, 2 orders, 3 items, 3 items, 4 items, 5 items. When I got there, there was no room for a 6th item. And so I couldn't order a 6th thing. I had to do a whole new order to get the other 2. Well, she was aggravated, I was aggravated. It's no way to run a business. So basically, the problem with repeating groups is that. So if I start out and I say, okay, I'm going to make a student table. And I'm going to put on here as my primary key, the student ID. And that's my primary key. Okay, and a primary key uniquely identifies every record on the table. It uniquely identifies every record on the table. So, here at VCC, your primary key is the student ID number you were given. Okay? With the government, your primary key is your Social Security number. Okay? So, those are the primary keys. They uniquely identify it. So, this uniquely identifies a student. Then I can put things like name, address, major, whatever information I have that I want to keep on the student, I can put in there. But I don't want to put the courses they're taking, because then I would have repeating groups. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a second table that I'll call student courses. Okay? And student courses is where I'm going to put the courses they're taking. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a record out for each course they're taking. So if they're taking 20 courses, there will be 20 records on there for that student. If the next per student is only taking 2 courses, there'll be 2 records. Okay, so those will be the records for the things. So I'm going to start out by putting in the student ID, so that I can relate back and get the student name. Okay? So it's about the student taking a course, so I have to know which student it is that's taking the course. Then I put on the course number to tell what course the person is taking. Okay? So I'm putting on a course number, and that tells what course the student is taking. So now I'm all set. I've got the student, and I've got the course that they've either taken or taking. Okay? So I've got the student, and I've got the course number. And I'm all set, except that, wait a minute, what if they flunk, and they want to take the course again? I'm not going to be able to, if I make this the primary key, student ID and course number, you aren't going to be able to retake any course. So I need to put something else in here, and I'm going to put in semester and year. So that uniquely identifies a record, the student ID, together with the course number, together with the semester and year that you took the course, uniquely identifies every course you've taken. So I'll put in student ID 111, course CIS 120, fall 19. Okay, if you don't pass and you decide to take it in the spring of 20, there will be a student 111, CIS 120, spring 19. And so I will have one for every course that the student took. And then that will be the primary key. So a primary key can be made up of multiple fields. I have to pull together multiple things that uniquely identify that record. And a record that is, this is this student taking this course this semester, or whatever semester. Then I can also put on the grade here. Okay? So I am ending up that if the student took five courses, then I am going to have five records on this student course table for that student. If they took 20 courses, I'll have 20 records. But I don't have any problem. They can take 1,000 courses if they want to. I'll just keep putting out records for all the courses they take. Okay? But there's no limit like there is if you have a repeating group. So there's a couple of things here. Number one, a table has to have a primary key. The primary key has to uniquely identify each record. And there cannot be any repeating groups. And that's where I've gotten so far. Then there are two other rules that are coming up. And you're just going to have to wait excitedly until next Thursday, because I want to spend a little more time on those than we have. So that's a start. We'll look at the next two on Thursday. We will go through how a relational database works a little and set one up. But I'm not expecting you to set up anything. I'm just trying to get you to kind of understand the vocabulary of what a table is, what a primary key is, and that sort of thing. So that when people talk about it, you won't say, huh. Okay. Alrighty, as I said, I want to spend a little more time on those two, so we will look at them on Thursday, and that means I'm done. I'm going to be around.